Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists, yes, they did. They absolutely got it right. And this is Tom Navolis, your host, and I am so delighted to be with you here, with you here again. Boy, I got a little tongue-tied on that one. And the program is none other than Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists got it right. I know, I mentioned that already. But I would like you to go to SamuelAdamsReturns.net, where all the archives are, where the actual promo for the program is, all the references, everything that you may or may not get opportunity to read, but it's all there for you, just in case you are interested and want to. Talking about want to, I wanted to talk about what I have in the topic in the promo. And I am going to kind of deviate from that a little bit, but let's look at it. And the title that I gave for those who do get the promo, again, you can sign up for that at SamuelAdamsReturns.net, or you can send me an email at Tom@SamuelAdamsReturns.com and give me permission to put your email into our mailing list. So the title for this week's program is The Hobgoblins of Anarchy and Dissension Among the States. Now, this was not something that I came up with as a title, especially around hobgoblins, in respect to this being October 31st, and those that so do, which I don't, celebrate this idea of Halloween. You would think then, oh yeah, Tom, you got the hobgoblin thing right just because of the day. Well, you know, because of my position as a reformed kind of person, the whole idea of celebrating about goblins and ghosts and all of that type of stuff just doesn't fit with the theology that I hold to. But this whole thing on the hobgoblins of anarchy wasn't my idea. As you have seen, it is from that anti-federalist Sentinel, and it says essay number 11. Now, Sentinel wrote a number of different essays. In fact, one of the quotes that I have here in respect to that comes from a very interesting preposition on who that person was, and there was a book that actually put together back in, 1998, 160-page book that was on the anti-federalist, specifically Centennial, because of everything that he wrote in respect to this new constitution that was coming forth. And as I quote in the newsletter, and the promo there is that in step with anti-federalist themes, he blasted the new frame of government as a conspiracy of the well-born few to enslave the many, a stealthy and calculated attempt to found a despotic empire by means of unwarranted innovations in government, contrary to the history, habits, and sentiments of the American people. With that, I think it's, you know, incumbent upon us as we look 2 days from now, when all of the early results will just flash up on the board as polls close for this November 3rd election on Tuesday, and we then see what form of government we shall have. What we have been hearing for the last 80 years is the slow introduction and ramping up of socialism until 2010, as I've stated in other programs, that the American Communist Party, or Communist Party USA is what they're known as, declared fully that they had taken over the Democrat Party in 2010, which it's obvious in 2020, 10 years later, everything that we're seeing, and many of those that were elected under the banner of a what I call Democrat, which kind of goes with the hobgoblin thing. So the Democrats are the socialist communist, and we're seeing it put forth, and you have a criminal in Joe Biden, I mean a blatant criminal that we're seeing all of the documentation coming out in Joe Biden, being the prominent leader so that whatever happens and whatever, you know, theory, strategy, or tinfoiled hat idea you may have that, what's her name, Kamala, will then become president and Joe go to his richness of obscurity. And then they can institute all of the socialist, communist, globalist ideas that they thought they were going to get in on that slow-moving train with Obama and then Hillary. But to this paragraph, this writer in writing about Sentinel is that what you have is he blasted the frame of government as conspiracy of well-born few to enslave the many, stealthy and calculated, and, you know, was going to produce this despotic empire. Well, folks, that's what, you know, old Khrushchev, as my dad and Kathy and I were talking the other day, you know, Khrushchev taking and pounding his shoe on the podium and saying, we will take over America without a shot ever being fired. We will take them over through your educational system. Oh, yeah. Well, so let me pump the brakes for a minute. And as we look at that, the ending of this is that the innovations in government. So what we've seen with over at least that I can understand from that early 60s and moving to the present is that we've seen all these various innovations of government coming forth that were to take and bring in the Keynesian economic model. And remember that none other than Nixon was very much a Keynesian economy in many, many ways. Then we had, so you had the economic model, you had the educational model, we saw Kent State in the 60s, we saw all of these other various people with ideologies that now are so predominant that even since Ronald Reagan saying that, you know, I will misquote him, but I will say it in the terms noted here, is that slavery is only a generation away. And the enslavement of the nation by the institution of these innovations in government. Here, but remember the last portion of that statement. Go read it again. You can read a bunch of this at SamuelAdamsReturns.net. Is contrary to the history, habits, and sentiments of the American people. What we are seeing in this somewhat, hopefully, groundswell as we look at all of these continuation of rallies for that President Trump is holding is that American history does matter. Our DNA, our fundamental, our foundational habits do matter. So, for instance, here in Ohio, our governor is pretty close to becoming the new blood brother to Gavin Newsom. So instead of Gavin Newsom, maybe we say Gavin DeWine. I almost said it, Dad. I almost insulted pigs again. I came close. You know, my dad listens to the program, so. But the thing is that the governor in Ohio, a Republican, is taking and telling everybody now we have to shut down because we had 2,000 cases in the whole state. You know, this high, what he's calling this peak again, where you have President Trump saying, no, you don't have to shut down. Open up your states, get back to business, get back to some sense of normalcy. We have a means of beating this thing. And then most of these people that are testing in these thousands happen to be kids. And kids as we well know statistically, and even from CDC themselves, have the resilience that is resounding. Or are you supposed to put that in the other form of resounding resilience? Anyway, the point of it is that once again, instead of taking and bringing reality, because there's so much other information out there that I'm not going to get in. I'm not making this a Chi-Com program. But the fact of the matter is that people are still living in fear. And I'm not discounting those that have either medical conditions or fall into that percentage that should have some higher concerns. But for the majority of the people, you're living in fear because you have the likes of Gavin DeWine taking and instilling fear to the point that he is looking at doing the California Newsom, Gruesome Newsom, and we're talking about hobgoblins and what that, and I'll tell you what a hobgoblin is when we get into the second segment, but they're talking about virtually canceling Thanksgiving and possibly Christmas. Now, you know, the communists, these innovators in government, hate Christianity and anything to do with giving God Thanksgiving. Remember, Thanksgiving is not about thanking one another. Oh, hey, thanks. Here's a pat on the back. Oh, no, no, no. It is thanking the living God of our what? Of our history and sentiments and our habits for all things that have been given to us as an individual, as a family, as a locale, as a city, county, and as a state. No, Thanksgiving is about thanking God. And guess what? They don't want you to do that. They don't want you to come together. And I mean they, and I mean the political likes of Gavin DeWine. And let's see, Mike Newsom. So we just kind of switch it up a little bit. Gavin DeWine and Mike Newsom. So we have the, anyway, I'm not going there about swines. I'll leave that one alone. I'm just not going to go down there. But what we have is our governor wanting to shut down the state of Ohio again. And we should be waking it up and having it open. So with that, that's kind of a precursor about Sentinel. Sentinel takes and he writes a lot on the Constitution, and he predicts, he's predictive. As I say, the anti-federalists have been predictive and looking at what could happen in the Republic with the new form of government. You know, where is a model of restraint, frugality, modesty? Oh, none of that exists. And he predicted that under this new constitution, the potentials of that, especially in bureaucracies, could come to the point that bureaucracies would impact our liberties. It's just like, what do you do? And the other side of this particular one that we're going to talk about somewhat, because I am going to go off onto John Piper. I know a lot of you don't know who John Piper is, but we'll talk about him in the second segment as well. But the point is that our states break down. And you have to understand, when it comes to this whole COVID thing, it is about follow the money. And so these are the types of items and principles that Sentinel talked about and how we go through this and we look at it to bring it into our modern thinking and look at where are we as a moral nation, and have we voted for the 70 plus million that have voted? Have we voted for morality? Have we voted for constitutionalism? Have we voted for fundamental principles? Or once again, will the enemy become predominant? Will that of socialism and communism and despotism be upon us because we didn't prepare for it in understanding Sam Adams and those anti-federalists? Come on back for the second segment. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the second segment of Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists, they got it right. And we're beginning to see that more clearly as we were discussing in the first segment. Sentinel really had a lot to say. And as I always do in this segment, I want you to remember that Liberty Works Radio Network is about your liberty. There's a lot of great programming. I look every day and I get the emails as it comes out with what the programming is for that day, who's going to be on the afternoons, what the programs are going to have. And I really sign up for that. Sign up and see what all of the weekly live programming is. And then, because I will say, you're going to get a different perspective from those hosts and hostesses than you are getting from all the other pundits that are out there, especially the big name pundits that are there. A lot of times they just kind of, continue on with all their stuff. What you need to do is find that donate button and go ahead and, contribute. Keep this listener-funded network going. So two things I want to address very briefly. Not so much briefly, but what I do want to address somewhat briefly is the For all of those that are evangelicals, there's a lot of big name evangelicals out there. And there's a whole cadre of them for a lot of different reasons that are they're not taking in and voting for Donald Trump. And they say it's because he's a sinner. Well, geez, go look in the mirror. We're all sinners. But they say, he raises all this contention and it's because of him. They bought, drank the Kool-Aid. It's because of him that we have all this vitriol. Well, if you recall and go back and look at a program I did years ago, probably at the beginning of Donald Trump's running in 2015, 2016, I did the comparison of what was happening at that time, that campaign season, and the vitriol that was there, and that which happened when John Adams was running for a second term and Thomas Jefferson. And you have to remember that those two didn't take and go out and campaign themselves. That's not how it worked back then. It was others. It was surrogates that were out there. It was surrogates that were writing all of the articles. It was surrogates that would take and create the vitriol. So what we have today is not Donald Trump creating the vitriol. I think it was well put. And in this discussion of Piper and a response, and, I got to apologize. I'm kind of dragging Doug Wilson into this one again, but his responses and his communiques and his commentaries about Piper's position, John Piper, I think out of Oklahoma, he's supposed to be a Reformed Baptist. He falls in the ilk of MacArthur and Alistair Begg and, a whole bunch of these other big name so-called Reformed Baptist or / evangelicals that are out there. Now, I will say this also. That doesn't exclude you Catholics or you of the Jewish faith, because there's a whole cadre of that split mess there where, quite frankly, the Pope is anti-Trump. And so you have a lot of, and you have to remember, especially from the Jesuit position, man, they love the communists and the communists love the Jesuits. So when you take and you look at that, you have the anti-Trumpers because they are the socialist communists. And guess where the Pope comes from? He comes from a communist country. Think about it. And as we know, many of our Jewish friends, sadly, have left the understanding of foundational Old Testament truth, and they don't even honor the Ten Commandments, so their morality is off into never-never land, and to the extent that they are predominant, like Chuck Schumer, in instituting the swamp and instituting all of that. You know, it's just not on one person, is what I'm trying to say. But the discussion in regard to all of that, especially those that are the predominant evangelicals that are whining about vitriol, I'll leave it with this, because otherwise you can go read Doug's stuff. It's down there in the references for today's program at SamuelAdamsReturns.net. I think that's up over my shoulder here. Is that, where were you 30 years ago? Most of you guys are in the same age category as myself. Where were you 30, 35 years ago when you started out in pastorship? Where were these people that are now complaining about who's in different political positions in the courts, in the bureaucracies, that are now anti-Christian, anti-Constitution? So they're God-haters, not God-fearers. They're pro-communist, socialist, globalist, not pro-independence and freedom and liberty and the truth that we were founded upon. Where were you then? You see, I think, and because I don't want to take the time and all these guys, I'm just going to lump them into one big bucket with soggy muck in it. And it's really slop that I would never, I mean, you'd have to find a place way out in my woods to dump it because it's that bad. It's that you were sitting on the rooftops waiting for the return of Jesus to the extent that you didn't take and engage in culture, engage in politics, engage in all of those things that are the extensibility of God's word in every aspect of humanity by virtue of having the whole and total and complete truth, and not establishing people that would be able to govern well on the biblical truths and principles. You let the schools go to the, what do they call it? Ed for Red, which is a communist organization. They're out there, they're blatant. Ed for Red runs our schools. Ed for Red is in a lot of the school boards. Ed for Red is superintendents within the different school districts. Oh my goodness, we can just flat out say that even in the Christian seminaries, that Ed for Red is there because they, anyway, not going down that path. So let me sum it up this way. I think the retort of Doug to John Piper that came out this latter part of this week would be an interesting read for you to do, if you're interested in that at all, again. But let me say to all the pastors and all the other folks out there that understand this piece, because I know I'm burning a lot of time on it, because I think it's the root of this election, is that the churches have to reform themselves and pastors have to get reformed. And I'll tell you what, I will take a Jonas Clark who got his X number of cords of wood, his chickens, his eggs, and all of that as his pay, then the likes of Piper, Alistair Begg, and all of those ilk that live in million-dollar homes and are very predominant in the community. You see, Jonas Clark ensured that his parishioners would be prepared to stand and fight in a battle. We don't have that in many churches anymore. Who out there would be willing to stand against Antifa knowing that it was for the defense of our liberties and our truths. The point is that Jonas Clark, who was related to none other than John Hancock, and who was a good friend of Samuel Adams, prepared his people in the truth of the gospel, in the full extensibility of it, in every aspect of their lives, to the point that when the British were coming, they stood on the green and fought. They fired and took return fire, and some died. Jonas Clark, as you know from what I read in the Chaplains and Clergy of the Revolution, Jonas Clark then attended to those that were killed and wounded and the pain of all of that. But at the same time, they stood and fought. How many of you pastors have the guts to stand and fight? To teach your parishioners to stand and fight? And where were you 30, 40 years ago in raising up the leaders that would be in education, that would be in politics, that would be in the bureaucracies? All right, I'm done with that. But that's what the election is, because we're where we are 30, 40 years ago, folks. Anyway, Hobgoblins of Anarchy, I talk about that, and you need to know a little bit about Samuel Bryan in these last, 3 minutes? So in these last 3 minutes, I just want to do a little character sketch. He was born actually there in Philadelphia, and he lived in Chester County, Pennsylvania. He was a resident of Pennsylvania, and he was an Anti-Federalist author who wrote during the Confederation period. He is ascribed to him are the Letters of the Sentinel as his pseudonym that he wrote between 1787 and 1789. He attacked the proposed Constitution as a document in the interest of the well-born, which we already covered. He was the son of George Bryan, a judge on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and the principal anti-federalist in the state, to whom the essays were frequently attributed when they were written. He wrote a whole series of essays. The first 18 of them appeared in 1787 and 1788. They reflected this position on the Constitution, as we were already saying, and we're going to get into that more in the third segment. He also wrote another series in 1789, 69 essays he wrote, again, on regarding the proposed amendments to the Constitution. Pretty prolific, okay? He was appointed, there as a state register general under the governor of Pennsylvania. In 1801, he became the comptroller. And very interesting individual, predominant individual in the Pennsylvania politics. And remember, Pennsylvania, the Quakers didn't want to do anything, and they were those that were reserved from even getting involved until they understood that their religious liberty was at stake as well. And they kind of changed their position and came into what would be known as the American transition from British rule. Whole thing comes down to tyranny, folks. I mean, it is something that, again, you know, I hope and I pray that you take and you go read and you research these things beyond what all the talking heads and pundits are out there clamoring as we move to Tuesday and we see what happens then and after. Because either way it goes, we know that those enemy, those despots, those tyrants, those that are trying to introduce a new form of government aren't going to back down. They haven't backed down yet, and they're not going to. So we need to be prepared, as Samuel Adams did as the head of security in Massachusetts, and prepare yourself in so many ways. And first off, it's by getting educated, and second, by bowing your knee before the living God. So come on back in the last segment. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this third segment of Samuel Adams Returns Those Anti-Federalists. Got it right. This is Tom Navolis, your host, and I'm so delighted that you're here. Once again, please go and sign up for the weekly promo newsletter at, right over the shoulder there, SamuelAdamsReturns.net. And you know what? I'd really love to hear from you. Please send me a letter, an email at tom@SamuelAdamsReturns.com. .net is where you get all the information. .com is where you get to send emails to me. As always, in this segment, I want to thank Dr. Mike Spaulding and Kathy Spaulding, who runs the show, Kathy, rock and roll. Isn't that amazing about Kathy's? They really know how to get things done. And all you folks there at Screaming Eagle, I know it's Soaring Eagle Radio, but you know what? We got to get out there and scream like eagles. First off, the name of Jesus. Second off, liberty in this country. And it's because of him. But wait a minute. What's today? You know, you go and you peek through your windows or you open the shades this way and you look out there and it's strange. Not that it's cold, not that the leaves fell off the trees. That's normal. Oh, what else is normal? You're looking out that window there and there's orange pumpkins that aren't in your house for pie, but they got weird faces cut into them. All these other things of death and dead and so on and so forth. Well, yeah, I know. I'm just describing that today is that Halloween thing and how many people get captured by it. Well, there's an interesting, as I put in the notes in there about mythology and reading a lot of the classics, whether they were the Latin classics, the Greek classics, and what we can learn from all of that. And in there is this thing called hobgoblins. What the heck is a hobgoblin? Hobgoblin is a fearsome, mythical creature. Fearsome, mythical creature. Well, how does that fit with what Sentinel is writing about in this particular Sentinel being Sentinel number 11? And how does that fit in relationship to the Constitution? But what does it mean for today? What does it mean for today? Well, I always go back to Ecclesiastes 1:9 that there's nothing new under the sun. Okay? Nothing new under the sun. We're living again what was being lived there at that time frame, but at this point, it's not about whether the Constitution was going to take and promote and do all sorts of evils and stuff like that. It's whether under Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and all of the demon, I say that with a loud emphasis, the demoncrats will continue to move all of their evil godlessness forward instead of protecting that which is the Constitution that went into effect, but the principles of governance that our founders intended, the principles of education, morality, and virtue. Anyway, in the Federalist article, I think you'll find that interesting in that regard, but you know, when I look at this, it's not about the ghouls when we think about hobgoblins. It's not about all of the costume play and tricks and all of that nonsense that are attributed to this day on the calendar. No, it literally is about those who are there in the background, who are now forward, who are evil, who are exactly, you know, when we look again at that definition, they are what? Fearsome, but not mythical. They're fearsome creatures. Fearsome creatures. They're fearsome creatures. because their intentions are tyranny and despotism. And we see what is happening all over the place. Now, through here, what Brian writes as Sentinel here is the evils of anarchy have been portrayed with all the imagery of language in the growing colors of eloquence. I want to stop there because this next portion of the sentence goes into talking about the new Constitution, which I like substituting in socialism, communism, globalism, and all of the other isms. Because, anyway, the point here is that what we have is the evils of anarchy have been portrayed with all imagery of language and growing colors of eloquence. Black Lives Matter. We have to stand up against fascism, Antifa, all of that, and more. I mean, you go through the litany. You can go listen to the other pundits to get the litany. But the fact of the matter is that they're putting on all this other color, all these other colors of language, an imaginary language that defines the fundamentals of anarchy. And the essence of it is that we've seen BLM and Antifa come out in a number of other statements and articles that they want to change the Constitution. Well, that's what Barack Obama said, is that he was intent on fundamentally changing America, these United States. And the only way that you can do that in toto is to take and destroy the Constitution. So I say here, in paraphrasing, the frightened mind is thence led to clasp to the new forms of governance, of socialism, of the communism, globalism, of environmentalism, as the instrument of deliverance, as the only avenue to safety and happiness. We have to have tolerance. The new instrument of government is tolerance, environmentalism, so that we can live happy and we'll be safe from the destruction of our environment. Yeah, right. I'm sorry. Yeah, right. I'm dramatic. Hey, today's a day you can be dramatic, right? Yes. So with that, you know, he continues on to all these things. So what we want to do to avoid the possible and transitory evils of one extreme, it is seduced into the certain and permanent miseries necessary attendant to the other. Now, things get tied together. And so what we had and where he was at was, you know, what was going on with the Confederation? Why was the Articles of Confederation, what was it about them that they were so bad? Okay, it needed some changes. Got that. But if you're going to go running into the arms of something which now we see after all this time with the increase of the bureaucracies, with the allowances of what is in every different department, and worse, when you have Congress that can manipulate things and those that use their name. I'm a Biden. That in the suspenders. I'm a Biden, so I'm a Clinton, I'm an Obama, I'm even on the Republican side. There's a number of those that stick their thumbs in their suspenders and get out there, and their names are used by family members to cut deals and enrich themselves. But, you know, I don't know if the big guy in other families gets the 10% or 50% of pay or whatever it is. Anyway, the point is that you don't jump from the frying pan to the fire. And we don't talk about that anymore a whole lot. I mean, they're finally, you know, President Trump was out talking about these people are socialists. They're flat out. Some of them are communist. And then you got Omar's a jihadist. And you got, what is, Tlaib is a jihadist communist. And yes, Nancy, in her hidden lips and fine-done hair. Yep, you can go back and you can trace her roots. As I've told you before, she has been a part of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which is nothing but a bunch of communists and those tepid socialists there in Congress. So what do we have? A state of anarchy, from its very nature, can never be a long continuance. The greater its violence, the shorter duration. And we saw that in Seattle. You know, they're pretty violent there. Next thing you know is that when the president was asked to, the troops went in and it went away. But without laws, without law enforcement, without all of that capacity, what we do is that we have a sanctuary for all the evil. Order and security are immediately sought by the distracted people beneath the shelter of equal laws and the salutary restraints of regular government. And if this is not attainable, absolute power is assumed by the one or the few who shall be the most enterprising and successful. Boy, that talks about the Clintons and the Bidens right there. If anarchy, therefore, were the inevitable consequence of rejecting socialism, communism, jihadism, all the isms, totalitarianism, tolerancism, environmentalism, on and on and on, the isms go, it would be infinitely better to incur it, for even then there would be at least the chance of a good government rising out of its licentiousness. Now, what we're seeing is, instead of looking at that anarchy that would fight against that which would be evil, what we're seeing is that the anarchy already being put in place, and we're hearing, I guess, both Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and several other of the predominant pundits out there spoke about the strategies and plans that they were able to get their hands on around Antifa, BLM, the Obama army that's out there in respect to what's going to happen either way after Tuesday. You see, these Antifa, BLM, communist, and agitators, because they are godless with no virtue or morality, are going to continue their evil tactics and antics. The hooligans, no, the hobgoblins, they're not just hooligans, they are what? They're this evil. They are these creatures, these that are despicable to any common sense. And their intention is the Marxist road of taking and implementing that which they believe to be the real form of governance. Well, what do you do? Well, you know, obviously, if you haven't voted, then it's incumbent upon you to go out and vote. Evangelicals, I would reject, I'm going to tell you flat out, I would suggest that you reject the John Pipers and all of the others and go in these last day and a half, go research and find out the truth of the clergy and the chaplains and clergy of the revolution and what it really meant to stand for liberty and truth and be involved and extend the gospel to every aspect of your life and the lives of those around. Then after that is be prepared for whatever's going to happen. I have no predictions. I'm praying that Donald Trump wins again and gives us 4 more years to prepare and continue to prepare in a way that we don't know, you know, what will happen there. But it then is going to become incumbent upon us to take back our local governments, to take back our school boards. And that's where you Christians need to get out there. And all of you patriots need to continue to get your butts out of your seats and your feet on your streets, as we're seeing with all these Trump trains and all, I mean, boat parades, tens of thousands of people standing for hours to hear a president that is reinstituting true republic principles in constitutionalism that Sam Adams said should be, because he was an anti-federalist, that got it right. See you next week.